Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We've written a few headings on the board. Gopakumara is really going to get around a bit today. Back from Puri to Vrindavan, from Vrindavan to Indraloka, to Mahaloka, to Tapoloka, and then to Brahmaloka, and then back to Vrindavan. And Sanatana Goswami says, this second chapter describes the glories of Swargaloka and the other higher planets in the universe. Inward meditation on the Supreme Lord is compared to external vision of Him, and devotional service is compared to liberation. So Gopakumara is going to go to these different places and experience different things there, but particularly he's going to be preached to twice. The sage Pipalayana on Tapoloka is going to explain to him why he thinks that seeing the Lord within the mind in a state of meditation is better than just seeing Him with your regular eyes. This is his idea anyway. He's going to try to explain that. It's a very interesting description. And then later on there's going to be a big debate on Brahmaloka between the personified scriptures. We mentioned the other day when Narada Muni went to Brahmaloka that Lord Brahma is there with the personified scriptures. So today the personified scriptures are going to debate amongst themselves to establish what they're going to establish is that liberation is easily achieved through devotional service rather than just through the cultivation of jnana, knowledge. And then the devotional scriptures are going to preach to Gopakumara and make the point much more strongly. Actually, they're going to make not exactly the same point, in fact, but a much more important point, that devotional service is far superior to liberation, and liberation is really just not to be taken seriously, actually. So these things, time allowing, time permitting, these things we'll try to go through today. So, yesterday we left Gopakumara in Jagannath Puri, but he just went back to Mathura. Right at the very, very end, he returned to Mathura. So he returned there to Vrindavan Dham and started mixing again with his old friends and herding the cows and enjoying the spiritual atmosphere and chanting his mantra constantly. He was advised, as we know, by Lord Jagannath, you go back to Vrindavan and you will find what you're looking for there. However, Gopakumara is not really so advanced yet. Of course, we might consider from what we heard yesterday that he really is very advanced, But in a certain sense, he is not so not so advanced. He's not so advanced in understanding, and he's not so advanced in terms of spiritual vision. So therefore, when he was there in Vrindavan herding the cows with his friends, even though it was nice and he was picking up on the spiritual mood to some extent, but he was not picking up on it that much, and he was missing being able to see the Lord in some form, as he had seen the deity of Lord Jagannath in Jagannath Puri. So he was missing that. And yes, the basic idea is that he wasn't really advanced enough yet to perceive the presence of the Lord, advanced in terms of spiritual vision, or at least to understand the Lord, that the Lord is there, in terms of knowledge. So as a result, he decided, I'm going back to Jagannath Puri, and he set off for Jagannath Puri again. So on his way back to Puri, he stopped by the Ganges, and he met some Brahmins who were talking about Swarga Loka, Indra Loka, the abode of Lord Indra. And as we mentioned yesterday, Gopakumar, he's completely uneducated. He has never heard of Swarga Loka. He has never heard of Lord Indra. He doesn't know what the place is or who this Indra is or anything. So he becomes attracted, and the Brahmins explain that it's a wonderful place, free from misery. Birth, death, old age, and disease are practically non-existent there. And it's available, it's very difficult to attain actually. It's only available through perfect acts of piety. And there are many festivals to honor the Lord of the universe. This is who he's looking for, the Lord of the universe. There are many festivals to honor the Lord of the universe, who is there in person as the younger brother of Indra. And in very directly personal ways relates with Indra. So when he heard these things, that the Lord is there, and he is, you could say, alive, speaking and acting and doing things. He's not just a deity, even though, of course, as we heard very vividly yesterday, he was highly, highly attracted to the different deities he saw. But still he thought, this will be better. Now I can speak to the Lord and he will speak to me. So he thought, I must go. But he didn't know how to go. However, by this point, Gopakumar has developed some faith in the mantra itself. So the first thing, he's thinking, how will I go there? First thing that comes to his mind is, I should chant my mantra. If anything can help me, it'll be my mantra. So he has come to that point, just as the Brahmin yesterday we heard. Initially, he didn't really have faith in the mantra, but eventually he got faith in the mantra when he saw the deity of the mantra. So Gopakumar, he has been increasing in faith in the mantra. Now he's got quite strong faith in the mantra. And basically, he thinks that whatever happens, the answer is chant the mantra. Yeah. Just like devotees, they go through certain phases and become more attached to chanting Hare Krishna, and eventually they come to the point of understanding that ultimately, the answer in practically every situation really is just chant Hare Krishna, take shelter of Krishna in a mature way like that. So Gopikumar, he's matured in his faith. So he chanted his mantra with particular care and attention, having faith that surely I'll be able to go on this basis. And sure enough, an aeroplane came from Swargaloka and took him there. So Gopikumar has gone in the same cowherd boy body to Swargaloka, Indraloka. And there, sure enough, he saw the Lord of the universe. The exact same form that he saw in the temple in the palace of the king. Not Jagannath Puri, the second place. The temple in the palace of the king in North India. Yes, the Lord was exactly the same as the deity, except he was sitting on the back of Garuda, discussing things with different people, accepting obeisances from Indra, and Gopikumar was elated, to say the least, so happy. He offered prostrated obeisances, and Lord Vishnu, Lord Vamana, greeted him very warmly, that I feel so fortunate. We are so fortunate that you have come. Enough of this bowing down. Just come here and don't be afraid. So, Gopikumar came forward and sat with the Lord, and then he spent time in the Nandana garden. He watched how Indra related with the Lord, how Lord Indra worshipped the Lord with all the opulences of Swargaloka very nicely. And he thought, this is wonderful. But there were two problems. Two problems. I won't ask you to guess them because I don't think you'd be able to, but one problem is, he noticed that the demigods sometimes quarreled, or they got into some kind of like childish or unimpressive types of interpersonal exchanges. Some jealousy seemed to be there between them, some envy. So occasionally, momentarily, he would see these things and it would strike him, but then he would become absorbed again in remembering the Lord and seeing how Indra was worshipping the Lord and how the Lord was so nicely accepting that worship. So again, he'd become more or less satisfied. But then a second thing happened. A second problem arose. Let us see if you can guess this. Can you guess what the second thing was? Well, if you read the notes last night, you'd probably pick it up. No. Not yet. No, well, maybe it didn't say it in the overview book, but he became a little, not envious of Indra, but he found that a desire was developing in his heart to have the same relationship with the Lord that Indra did. That very personal, very intimate relationship, like brothers, and that closeness. In other words, he desired to become Indra and to take over the position of Indra. Not for the sake of the heavenly pleasures, but just for the sake of the relationship with Lord Vamana. So actually, behind the scenes, just like we mentioned yesterday, see, it's an important part of our philosophy. Brahmanda Brahmate Kona Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Beach. One may be wandering around here and there in this world, but then by the combined mercy of Guru and Krishna, then one becomes fortunate. Basically, one gets a seat of devotional service, one becomes fortunate. So initially, he met his spiritual master and he got started, you could say, by the mercy of his spiritual master. And then eventually, at the end yesterday, he was in Jagannath Puri. He met his spiritual master again, who gave him further instruction. But then the Lord also intervened. The Lord personally caused Gopikumar to become a little envious of those Arisan devotees, like those pig herders. What do they call them? Shabaras. Yes. They don't look very special. In fact, they look less than ordinary, really, by material circumstances. They're pig farmers and really not very impressive. But they have special intimate connection with the Lord, special intimate service. So the Lord himself arranged that Gopikumar would become a little, you know, just feel a little strange about that, and in this way become dissatisfied. So the Lord and the spiritual master are working here, that's a fact. So again, here, the Lord wanted Gopikumar to become Indra. So the Lord stimulated Gopikumar within the heart to become attracted in that way, on the basis of the intimacy of the devotional connection, to become Indra. So what did Gopikumar do when this desire started coming into his mind, into his heart, and he really started feeling, yes, I want to become Indra? So what did he do? He chanted his mantra more attentively with this desire in mind, thinking, I'm sure, even more sure than before, because now he saw how he got to Indraloka through the mantra, so he's become even more sure. I'm sure this is the way to do it. And sure enough, he was right. One day, Indra raped the wife of one sage, somehow became bewildered. And he had to run and hide to avoid the effects of curse. So, at that time, the demons, the celestial demons, they understood the situation. So they attacked and started infiltrating and penetrating and endangering the three worlds, actually. So all the other demigods were anxious. Lord Indra was hiding. He would not come out because he was afraid of the curse. So the demigods went to Lord Vishnu, and what did he say? Accept this Gopikumar as Indra. So Gopikumar became Indra. And then you know what Gopikumar did. He made the whole three worlds a festival of devotional service. That was it. The three worlds, Bhur, Bhuva, and Swa. Not the whole universe, exactly, but Anyway, pretty good part of it. But not actually the whole universe. Wait till he becomes Lord Brahma. But anyway, as far as he had influence, which is basically within Bhuloka, Bhuvaloka, and Swargaloka, his own realm, he engaged everyone in devotional service. It was a non-stop festival. Oh. But what did he do? Did he move into Indra's palace and live very opulent lifestyle? No. He stayed in the Nandana garden because it reminded him of Vrindavan. At the same time, he's getting, you know, he just left Vrindavan because he felt it wasn't really what he was looking for, or he couldn't really put his finger on it. Well, at least he felt he couldn't specifically perceive the Lord there. But still he gets this feeling coming up. It just keeps on haunting him. Vrindavan, Vrindavan. So he lived there in Indraloka as Lord Indra, but living in the garden as a penniless person. Yes, very simple life. And what was he doing? He was chanting his mantra. And more appreciating it. But as he chanted it, what did he find? He was becoming more and more haunted by the idea of Vrindavan and going back to Vrindavan and remembering Vrindavan. So he's in this kind of mixed condition of happiness, distress, and so on. So eventually, the separation, as he was chanting more and more, the separation became too much. The Lord would come and try to pacify him, seeing that his face had become withered in anxiety. The Lord would personally feed him with his own hand and pamper him and serve him like a younger brother, a very sort of dedicated younger brother may serve his older brother. And then he'd become a little happy. But then the Lord would leave sometimes and Gopikumar would feel lonely. And then he would go back into that state of lamentation and separation, sometimes from Vrindavan and sometimes from Jagannath Puri, feeling separation. So he was Indra for 1 year of the demigods, 360 human years. And he was in this mixed state, although there was a lot of happiness. One day, Bhrigu Muni came with some other great sages. And Gopikumar never, even though he was Indra, he'd never heard of these people. He didn't know who they were. He didn't know where they'd come from. But he was amazed to see that all of his associates, all the demigods, were offering their obeisances and offering prayers. And even Lord Vamana, who was there, offered his obeisances. So Gopikumar asked the demigods, who are these people? But the demigods became envious and they wouldn't answer, because they didn't like it that these people are higher than us. But then Brihaspati, who is like more advanced spiritually, he explained, these people are from Mahaloka, which is higher than Swargaloka. As Indra's enjoyment is 100 times greater than earthly enjoyment, so in Mahaloka, their enjoyment is 100 times greater than on Swargaloka, Indraloka. And there they worship the Lord of the universe in an even more wonderful form as the Lord of sacrifice. So, what did Gopa Kumar do? You got it. He chanted his mantra with even more attention. And he went there. He found himself in Mahaloka. And there were thousands of... What types of people live there? Do you remember from yesterday? Mahaloka? Householders. Householder Brahmin devotees. They're all householder Brahmin devotees. And they were all doing sacrifices, fire sacrifices. And when it came time to offer the different items into the fire, the Lord himself would come out of the fire and accept those things, not just in one sort of form, as on Swargaloka, but out of all these thousands of fires, the Lord would come. So Gopa Kumar thought, this is wonderful. This is really nice. So the Lord of sacrifice saw Gopa Kumar and greeted him, gave him some prasadam, which gave him more ecstasy than he'd experienced even in Swarga. So then he wandered around from house to house, observing the sacrifices in every house, seeing the Lord in every house, speaking to the Lord in every house, until eventually a group of sages approached him and said, "Why don't you become a Brahmin and join us?" Now Gopa Kumar, when they offered him this, he became attracted, but then he thought, "No, I'd rather remain a Vaishya. Then I can serve the Lord and the Brahmins." So he wouldn't accept a position as a Brahmin doing sacrifice. He remained a cowherd boy. See, he already had that benediction. So he was like protected by that benediction, which was, the benediction was said to be a result of chanting the mantra very nicely, that he would always remain a cowherd boy. And he thought, if I get into the sacrifice business, I may become lax in my chanting. And he thought, no chance. I'm not going to give up my chanting or even reduce it or anything. So he was appreciating the chanting more and more. So he was there watching the sacrifices, talking to the Lord. But at the end of the day, they'd stop the sacrifice and the Lord would go away. So there was some separation from the Lord. And he wasn't happy always. Then when the end of Brahma's day came, the sages, because of the dissolution on Swargaloka, where he had just come from, everything, including Swargaloka, everything beneath, including Swargaloka, burnt. So because of the heat, they had to go to Janaloka. And then he didn't see the Lord anywhere there. So he became more dissatisfied. Anyway, afterwards they went back to Mahaloka, which is not destroyed at the end of Brahma's day. And he was missing Vrindavan. One day, a naked 5-year-old boy came to Mahaloka. All the sages stood up and received him with great respect. And they worshipped him as if he was the Lord of sacrifice himself. And then he left. So the sages told Gopakumar, he is Sanatkumar. He is from Tapoloka. Yes. And only celibates can go there. Again, Gopakumar had never heard of Sanatkumar, never heard of Tapoloka, didn't know anything about these things, but he decided he wanted to go there, so he chanted his mantra. And he arrived there. And sure enough, there were the four Kumars being worshipped by many other sages. And they were all discussing, they were having the discussion, which is there in the chapter of the 10th canto, the prayers of the personified Vedas. They were discussing all these subject matters, which Gopakumar had never heard of before, and he couldn't follow it. But he thought, it must be pretty high. So he was walking around, and he saw all these sages meditating. He would try to speak to some of them, but they wouldn't reply, because they were in samadhi. So he was feeling a little frustrated. Plus, he couldn't see the Lord. So he was feeling more frustrated. But he kept chanting his mantra, and he became even more absorbed in his mantra. And finally, the sage Pipalayana, he appears in the 11th canto. Isn't it? He's one of the nine Yogendras. Yes, in the 11th canto, Pipalayana Muni is there. So he spoke to Gopakumar and invited him, come and join us, learn meditation. And then he explained that we see the Lord always. All of us, we all see the Lord, and we all see him always. Now, bear in mind that in Indraloka, it was mainly Indra who was seeing the Lord. Others would see him when they were with Indra, other demigods. But when they had to go and do their duties, they wouldn't see the Lord. So it was mainly Indra who was seeing the Lord. But even then, sometimes the Lord would go away. Then in Mahaloka, the householders, the householder Brahman devotees, they would all see the Lord, but only when they were doing sacrifice. Not in the evening, not in the morning before they started the sacrifice, only when they were doing the sacrifice. Pipalayana told him, here, we all see the Lord always. So Gopakumar was looking around and thinking, really? Where? What is the idea? What's the secret? So then Pipalayana told him the secret. You have to learn meditation. Yes, so then he explained why. Why we focus on meditation. We are not so concerned about seeing the Lord with these eyes. That is not so good. We would rather see him with our minds or hearts. Mind and heart here, is these terms are synonymous. So he explains why. And try and catch this, because, you know, not that we would really agree entirely, but there's some very interesting points here, and I think it's going to come up in the next test. First of all, he said, the Lord reveals himself, meaning, reveals himself means in such a way that the devotee can appreciate that he is the Lord. Only when the mind is thoroughly purified, or the heart is thoroughly purified. And then you see the Lord with your heart, with the eyes of the heart, or with the mind's eye, not with these eyes, not with these eyes, but the internal eye. He said that these senses, all of the senses, including the eye, the sense of sight, and all the other external senses, they're all under the control of the mind. They are just like subordinate functions of the mind, really. Yes, they're under the control of the mind. And if the mind is not functioning, even if the senses are there, but they are useless. And the self will not perceive anything through them. And these are important points. Then he said, even if the Lord reveals himself to the eye of the devotee, he is seen by the power of the mind, or in terms of the condition of the heart. When the mind is, well, yeah, okay. He says, seeing the Lord in person is no guarantee of becoming blissful or, you know, having like real realization. As we see in the cases of people like Kamsa and Duryodhana. Well, that's a good point. They saw the Lord with these eyes and they didn't become blissful. There was a lack of realization in their minds, in their hearts. So even though they saw him with these eyes, there was no, you know, like real experience, proper experience. And even some people like Madhu and Kaitaba and so many demons actually, they also saw the Lord with their eyes. But not only did they not become blissful, but they didn't lose their evil natures. So therefore, to see the Lord with the eyes is not really the point. And Pipalayana said that the Lord, in his pastimes, he allows things like this to happen. Like Kamsa and Duryodhana, seeing the Lord with their eyes, but not becoming blissful. Rather, they became anxious and fearful. And people, demons like Madhu and Kaitaba, they saw the Lord, but they didn't lose their evil dispositions. Pipalayana says that the Lord allows things like this to happen just to demonstrate the glory of this meditation process and perceiving the Lord in that way through meditation with the mind, within the mind, within the heart. Yes. How does that sound? Anyway, you can see he is a meditation fan. So he's a bit too much on that side. Although there's some nice points here at the same time. But we would not accept that this is like the ultimate understanding. Although, you know, there's something in it. And Pipalayana, he is certainly a very important transcendental person. So he said, when the mind is pacified, then it can fix on the Lord and then you can become happy. And when you experience that happiness, none of your external senses can experience it. In other words, it is strictly internal. It is not just a sensory experience. It is something beyond the senses. It is mental, or it is within the heart. It is an internal experience. So then he concludes by saying that of the 9 devotional processes, remembrance is the most important. Well, it's very important, but actually we accept hearing as being more important. Anyway, he is a meditation fan. He is particularly inspired by remembering the Lord. So this is his taste, really. Yes, of the 9 devotional processes, remembrance, smaranam, is the main one. And one can only render devotional service when the mind is fixed like this. So, in this way, Pipalayana Rishi preaches to Gopakumar. So Gopakumar, he became attracted. He took up the meditation. Along with chanting his mantra, and sure enough, he saw the Lord in his meditation. But he found that when he would go deep into his meditation, he would forget about his chanting. So sometimes he would come out of his chanting, out of his meditation after a long time, and he would feel anxious that, oh, I haven't finished my chanting. So then he would express, he would say things like, oh, what a problem, what a disturbance. So Pipalayana and the 4 Kumars would ask him, what is wrong? And then they'd preach to him and get him to go back into meditation again. But like this, he found he wasn't entirely happy. And he found that he was remembering Vrindavan sometimes. One day, a strange but very imposing looking person with 4 heads came. And everyone, the 4 Kumars, who are like the senior people there in Tapaloka, the 4 Kumars, Pipalayana, and all the other big sages, they all offered their obeisances to this very impressive looking 4-headed person. And Gopakumar asked the Kumars, who is this? They said, it's our father, Lord Brahma, from Satyaloka. It is even higher than this place. And there, the Lord of the universe is living in a 1,000-headed form. What is the name of that form? The Mahapurusha. So we are meeting some of the same persons. Yes, so Gopakumar, he immediately started chanting his mantra, and sure enough, he went there very quickly. And there he saw the Supreme Lord reclining on Ananta. Lakshmi was massaging his feet, and Lord Brahma was there. And the Lord was very compassionately, very benevolently instructing Brahma in devotional service. And Lord Brahma was leaning forward and hearing the instructions, then stepping back and repeating the instructions and then agreeing with the instructions, it was a very nice scene. Gopikuma fainted, overwhelmed that at last this must be that supreme place. But Lakshmi picked him up and brought him to the side of the Lord. So he told his mind, he preached to his mind, give up this hankering for Vrindavan and Jagannath Puri. Just give it up and just stay here. So he stayed there for some time, watching Lord Brahma, worshipping the Lord, and the Lord was acting as a father to Lord Brahma. But sometimes the Lord left. Anyway, in the meantime, somehow Gopikuma, seeing the intimate connection between Lord Brahma and the Lord Mahapurusha, he developed the desire to have the same relationship. He desired to become Lord Brahma. So one day, just after one of the minor devastations, when these devastations happen, well, it is a bit of a mess. So there was a large residue of foam left over from all the tossing and all the commotion of the previous devastation. Some large amount of foam was there. Somehow, Lord Brahma touched it, thinking that, well, just not thinking anything, really. And so he touched it. Soon as he touched it, that foam transformed into a terrible demon, massive demon, extremely powerful. Why? Because he embodied the terrible, destructive power of the ocean of devastation, the Pralaya ocean, which is an important component in the devastations in the universe. So he embodied that power, the power to destroy, and Lord Brahma became scared. And he ran and escaped. So the Lord, the Mahapurusha, easily killed the demon. But Lord Brahma was too scared and wouldn't come back. So then the Mahapurusha appointed Gopikuma. You become Lord Brahma. So Gopikuma then arranged everything in the entire universe in a wonderful Vaishnav way. He sent devotees throughout the entire creation to preach devotional service. He made all the demigods, well, he appointed pure devotees to become all the demigods. In fact, it was so nice that devotees were coming from other universes. And he was sending them out on different missions in the universe for Krishna consciousness. And it was just, the whole universe was an overwhelming festival of devotional service. It was just wonderful. Despite everything, Gopikuma remained his simple cowherd boy self. Yes, he maintained that lifestyle And what did he do? He kept chanting his mantra. He's really into his mantra by now. He is extremely into it because he's had so much experience from it. And as a result, his realization and his faith, oh, has become extremely, powerfully strong. However, there were some problems. As Lord Brahma, he had a lot to do. So many things to do. He started drowning in the ocean of duties of a Lord Brahma. One day he heard that he was going to die after some time. And he got quite taken aback by this. And he started becoming a little fearful sometimes. And then he would chant his mantra and he would remember Vrindavan and he would become disturbed in that way. But then when he served his father, the Lord, and when Goddess Lakshmi treated him very affectionately and consoled him like a mother, then he felt happy for some time. So in this way, he had a mixed experience, or he was having a mixed experience in Satyaloka, Brahmaloka. So one day, as Lord Brahma, in Brahmaloka, Satyaloka, Gopakumar was sitting there, and as was, you know, quite ordinary, all sorts of people were coming and going, visiting him, so many demigods and sages and saintly persons and mystics and all sorts. One day, a group of sages were there, and he just overheard them talking about someone from Earth who had attained impersonal liberation and how wonderful that was and how blissful it was and how it was even higher than any pleasure in the material world, even the pleasures on Brahmaloka. So when Gopakumar heard this, he talked to them, he asked them questions, and they answered his questions very well. He found himself becoming attracted to impersonal liberation. However, some of his close associates, different of the Vedic scriptures, they also heard this going on, this discussion. So they came over to take part. First of all, the goddesses of the Upanishads and other of the Shruti scriptures. Shruti means different parts of the four Vedas. Like, if you're familiar with the composition, the structure of the Vedas, they're divided up into Samhitas, Brahmanas, Aranyakas, and Upanishads. Yeah. Actually, every Veda, there are four Vedas, and they're composed of Samhitas, but each Samhita has its Brahmana, Aranyaka, and Upanishad. They're grouped in groups of four like that, although the main element is the Samhita. So, all these different scriptures, the different subdivisions of the four Vedas, they started agreeing, saying, yes, this is very good. However, you can only attain liberation through cultivation of knowledge, jnana, which of course is something that Gopakumar is very weak in. There are also some of these Smriti Shastras who were agreeing. Smriti Shastras means they're the Dharma Shastras, Shastras like the Ayurveda and Dhanurveda. These are Dharma Shastras from the Smriti section, not actually within the four Vedas as such, as we know them. Some of the Puranas even some of the Pancharatras, these are Smriti, not Shruti. Of course, I don't know if we really want to go into the details of the differences between Shruti and Smriti, but basically Shruti means the four Vedas and their immediate corollaries. And Smriti means the Dharma Shastras, the Itihasas, the histories, Ramayana and Mahabharata, and the Puranas and Pancharatras, the Tantras. These are Smriti Shastras. So some of them, who are more on the impersonal side, they were all agreeing, yes, yes, this is very good, but if you want it, they're addressing Gopakumar, if you want it, because they could see he was attracted, if you want it, you have to cultivate knowledge of Brahman. So then, some of the personified Puranas and Agamas. The Agamas, what are the Agamas? They are Vaishnav scriptures, Vaishnav tantras, Vaishnav, they're like instruction manuals on different devotional activities, like Narada Pancharatra. That is a Vaishnav Tantra. So it is an Agama scripture. And Narada Pancharatra is explaining the process of deity worship. So their instruction manuals, the Agamas, their instruction manuals, how to carry out different Vaishnav processes in very practical terms. So some of the Puranas and some of these Agamas, Vaishnav instructional type books, they said that actually this knowledge you're talking about is very hard to obtain, and this liberation is very hard to obtain, but it's easily achieved by devotional service. Now, bear in mind, I don't know if you noted at the beginning, but we said that in the end, this point is accepted, that liberation is easily achieved by devotional service, more easily than by simply cultivating knowledge. And even knowledge comes more easily if you render devotional service. This is the point which is going to come out at the end. Although, of course, we understand this is not the ultimate point in the Vedic scriptures. Anyway, so these scriptures made the point that if you try to cultivate this knowledge of Brahman independent of devotional service, it is almost impossible. It's practically impossible. But if you perform devotional service very correctly, then you can achieve liberation easily without taking any help from any other process. And for example, they quoted, here's a verse from Brihannaradiya Purana. jivanti jantava sarve yata mataram ashrita tata bhaktim samastritya sarva jivanti siddhaya. In the same way as all living beings live their bodies under the shelter of their mothers, so all perfections live under the complete shelter of devotional service. So just try and understand what is being said here, or the way they are expressing themselves, in a very mild way, actually in an indirect way. They are saying that liberation exists under the shelter of devotional service. It's a mild statement. So certain shrutis and smritis, certain parts of the Vedic scriptures and their corollaries, and certain of the Puranas and other Smriti Shastras quietly agreed and nodded their heads. Their scriptures, which have statements like, this is from the Padma Purana, Apatyam Dravinam Dara Hara Karmyam Haya Gaja Sukhani Swarga Moksha Cha Nadure Hari Bhaktita. Children, wealth, one's wife, precious necklaces, one's home, horses, elephants, and all kinds of happiness, plus the attainment of heaven and liberation. None of these are far away when devotional service to Lord Hari is present. So what is the point here? It's making it a little more clear. In other words, the idea is that certain scriptures, particularly the four Vedas, but even some of the Smriti Shastras, they're impersonal, or at least they encourage an impersonal outlook. Then some parts of the Shruti, some parts of the four Vedas and their corollaries, some parts of the Smriti, in other words, some of the Puranas and so on, they just gently say that you can get liberation through devotional service. Some say it more strongly, and this is the case here. Wait a minute. Yeah. Some say it more strongly. So the scriptures which say it more strongly, they quietly agreed. They don't say it a lot more strongly, but a little more strongly. They quietly agreed. Then, some of the Maha Upanishads, some of the great Agamas, Vaishnav, Tantric instructional literatures, and others, and some other Puranas, which have their roots in the Shruti. Anyway, we don't want to get too technical, but it's very interesting. They became angry with the scriptures who quietly agreed. And they said, why don't you make this point more clearly? Make this point more clearly. That liberation is easily achieved by devotional service. You should say it. Don't just hint at it. You should say it and make it clear. With statements like this from the Vishnu Purana. Dharam arta kamai kim tasya muktis tasya karestita samasta jagatam mule yasya bhakti stira twai. If someone has firm devotion towards you, the root of all the worlds, then what is the value of religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification to him? Liberation sits in the palm of his hand. So we have four groups of scriptures here, four categories. Those who are kind of impersonal, those who are saying that if, or those, let us say, impersonal, but those who are saying that the goal is liberation, those which are saying that liberation is more easily achieved by devotional service, those which are saying that liberation is much more easily achieved by devotional service, and those that are saying that liberation is just nothing. It's in the palm of the hand of someone who's rendering devotional service. So easy. Yes. Then some very great scriptures acknowledged the discussion. They were the most confidential and rarely obtainable Upanishads, like the Gopal Tapani Upanishad. And there are others. They're Vaishnav. When I say Vaishnav, they are like full on strong Vaishnav scriptures. But they're Upanishads. What does that mean? It means they're part of the Shruti, part of the four Vedas, or connected with the four Vedas. Then certain great Vaishnav agamas, those Vaishnav instructional literatures, like Sattvata Siddhanta, and a few of the Puranas, and the head of all these scriptures was Srimad Bhagavatam. They all sat there and smiled. That's what they did. They all sat there and smiled, but didn't say anything. Now you might think that, why not? Seems like an important discussion to take part in. But they didn't say anything, they just smiled. So Sanatana Goswami explains, some of them were thinking, just see the power of the Supreme Lord's illusory energy, by which even the essential message of Scripture, which should be obvious, becomes incomprehensible, even to vastly learned authorities, like the Scriptures. Because the thing is, you know, the real point which we're going to come to is that none of these scriptures have got the point. The point has got nothing to do with liberation. Anyway, that's going to come out when the devotional scriptures preach to Gopa Kumar on their own, away from this debate which is going on. So then others of these great, the greatest scriptures, were thinking in a scornful way, who are these Shastras daring to openly declare the confidential glory of bhakti that it bestows liberation? So they didn't appreciate it. So the second group considered the less advanced scriptures unqualified to become involved in such a discussion, and they felt that this was the wrong format, that the whole thing that was going on was wrong, and therefore they didn't take part. So then, those agamas, you remember the agamas, who are really, you know, teaching how liberation is easily achieved through the devotional service. And a few of their friends, they got really fired up. And there was a fierce debate between them and the more impersonal scriptures. So the great scriptures just left. They didn't even bother staying in that place. So when they left, all the other scriptures sort of got a little taken aback. And then there was some attempt to resolve the matter, and it was felt, you know, that somehow the fact that the great scriptures left had such an impact on the other scriptures that they all agreed, all right, liberation, knowledge and liberation are easily achieved by devotional service, more so than by knowledge alone, as the Agamas had originally said. The first Agamas had originally said. So this pleased Gopakumar. In other words, Gopakumar is now feeling that if I want to get liberation, then I should do it through devotional service. As Lord Brahma, he is thinking in this way. However, then he remembered those great devotional scriptures. He had noted their very deep, very grave smiles as they were listening to all these conjectures and different arguments being presented. And then he remembered how they left the debate in disgust. And he thought, they must have a higher idea. So he went to them and appealed to them, please come back. Please explain to me what is really the answer. So they came and they explained to Gopakumar. They said that sometimes, it's true, sometimes we have to mention impersonal liberation. Just to contrast it with devotional service. Just to glorify devotional service as being far better than it. Sometimes we have to describe it, or mention it at least, mention it. Sometimes we have to mention it to encourage people to completely avoid it. But actually, you should know that the pleasure of devotional service is many millions of times greater than that of liberation. Yes. They explained there's no positive pleasure in liberation. It's just a relief from pain, or it's just something like sleeping. It's nothing. It's not a positive experience. It's like nothing in particular. It's not positive. It's not negative. It's just kind of nowhere. And they said that it's not really liberation because afterwards you'll take birth again. After some time you'll fall down. And they quoted 10, 2, 32, is it? Or Yen Ye Ravandakshava Muktamaninas Twayastabhavad Avashuddha Buddhaya Aruya Kritrena Parampadam Tata Patanchido Nadrata Yushmadangraya. That those people who become liberated, but Patantida, they fall down again. because they have no attachment for the lotus feet of the Lord. So they said this word liberation is a misnomer. It's not the right name. It is not liberation. It is just a temporary cessation of suffering. It is not actual liberation as such. And they said that in terms of the activities of devotional service, this liberation is available even through Namabhas, a quite undeveloped stage of chanting the holy names, nowhere near the pure stage. So, but they said there is some value in it. It helps us understand that we are Brahman. We're not these bodies. We are Satchit Ananda. We are spirit. It helps us in that respect. But it doesn't give the proper understanding of who we are. That we are, along with those things, we are actually the eternal servants of Krishna, and he is the supreme Brahman. So therefore, we are one with and different from him. We are one with him in quality, but different from him in quantity. So the great scriptures said that therefore our philosophy is achintya bhed abhed tattva. We are spirit, we are Satchit Ananda, we are Brahman, but the Lord is Parabrahman, the supreme Brahman, far greater than us in quantity. So they went on like this to explain how devotional service is far better than liberation. Liberation is nothing. It's hardly even a secondary consideration. They said even demons attain it. Cow killers and killers of Brahmins attain it sometimes. So how can it be so great if people like that attain it? Then they explained to Gopakumā that we have explained things to you in this way just to help people who are attached to liberation become attracted to devotional service. But actually there is far more that we could tell you. There's a lot more that we could tell you, but we just want you to understand this point. So Gopakumā agreed, yes, I will not worry about impersonal liberation. I'll just be a devotee. So they told him, you go, you chant your mantra, and go beyond this universe. If you want to see the Brahman in a personal form, go to Mahakalapur, beyond the universe, and see Lord Mahakala. He is the Brahman in a personal form. Yeah, so you can see. I mean, an interesting point here is that the prospect of Gopakumā becoming an impersonalist, you know, it was taken to be a big problem. So all these big scriptures came and they really kind of worked him over. They really preached to him in a big way to get him out of being an impersonalist. And they succeeded. He came back to being, or he came to the point of being a personalist. They told him, you try and go there, but if you're not satisfied there, go back to Vrindavan. Now, he's still on Brahmaloka, and he was sitting there wondering what to do. But then the Lord came to him and told him, just go back to Vrindavan. Just go back there. And then from there, perhaps you can approach this Mahakalapur if you want to. So therefore, the second chapter concludes with, oh, and the Lord told him, you'll see your guru again there. So go back. So the chapter concludes with Gopikumar about to go back to Vrindavan. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.